And they run through our ass like shit through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
It's ridiculous that they do. That was a huge colony. Well, we didn't miss it. You know, the typical rah, 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 zip, boom, bah, boo.
You don't cuss. You don't drink. So what are your vices?
I have been known to chew a bit of tobacco when I get a little tired or watching film.
Hey, I'm Coach O. I just love my Hummer. I have my Hummer. You need a Hummer? Tell them about it, JoJo.
They've won the biggest championship, and that's the championship of life.
Gas control. Everybody just do your job. You understand that?
Welcome in to the latest episode of That SEC Transfer Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Bratton. I go by SEC Mike on Twitter. And I'm joined, as always, by my cousin Shane, who goes by Big Orange Vols on Twitter. What are you up to, you big Tennessee homer?
Hey, buddy. I didn't put my name in the transfer portal, too, but until I get a better offer, I guess I'm going to stick around with you, Mike.
Well, that's kind of been the story around the SEC this weekend, Shane. Everybody and their damn mothers in the NCAA transfer portal. We're going to do a little deep dive on what exactly that is for just kind of clear up the misconceptions there. But before we jump into all that, Shane, we got to talk about this Jadon Hazelwood clip that's gone viral.
Oh, man.
For anyone that did miss it, Jadon Hazelwood, five-star receiver. He was once committed to Georgia. He's from Georgia. And during the All-American Bowl, you know, he announced his commitment to Oklahoma over, I believe it was Tennessee and Georgia and maybe Miami was his finalist there. But, you know, he was just asked about his decision and all that. And old Jadon, man, he went in on Georgia's coaching staff, called him a bunch of fake coaches. So we're going to play this quick clip and then we'll jump into it.
I'm going to ask you this same question for Miami too, but what would you say was the final straw for UGA? Like when you just like, you know what, this it. I cannot go here. No matter what they do, I cannot go here.
I say my last visit, really.
Last visit? What happened?
It was just like they was just doing, they was trying to make you too happy, mm-hmm. and then just change when you get there. Like, right. You know that's gonna happen.
Right. Because you look, the offensive coordinator already gone.
He gone, exactly.
He already gone.
And he sat down in our house and explained how he gonna
exactly.
Be right, how he gonna use
then
you.
Then he did.
As soon as he's over, he gone.
Exactly.
But then that's when I say, you know, Jaden is a very smart man.
Yeah.
And I got to give him that. If I can't give him nothing
what
else.
What I tell you in the house?
Yeah. You was like, they fake.
Yeah. You able to see like, through the board.
He was like, hey, Mom, you cannot listen to everything that they say. He said, I know. I feel it. And I was like, yo, he right.
She wouldn't believe me.
You know what I'm saying? Because like, the more and more that he talked to me, the more and more I got understanding.
Yeah.
Then I start to see things for myself. And I'm like, oh, man, that's crazy. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
For worse than a car sales.
Yeah, that's all they are is car sales. That's it. The whole college game is just like a car sale.
All right, Shane. So this went viral after all this, Shane. And Hazelwood had to come out with a statement thereafter, basically just calling the Georgia coaching staff, you know, why didn't you go to Georgia? Because he just felt that they weren't fake. They're just trying to make him be something he's not. What's your reaction to all this?
I'm kind of torn, Mike. I mean, of course they're going to be selling you. I mean, that's the whole point of recruiting. They're trying to make your products sound better than the other product. And I'm kind of torn on Hazelwood here just because, you know, he was highly touted. There was a lot of people thinking he was going to go to the University of Georgia, and he didn't. He decided to go to the University of Oklahoma. And then Chaney left, and then he comes out with a statement. So I don't know. It'd be one thing if he was committed to Georgia, and then all of a sudden Chaney decided to leave. Mm-hmm. And then he came out with this statement. It'd have credence to me, but nah, not now. I mean, he made his bed, sleeping it there in Oklahoma. And honestly, probably that head coach is going to be gone in 2 years anyway, taking an NFL job. And then look who's the salesman then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's an interesting point. But just a weird and wild time here for NCAA recruiting. Just you got to know what you're getting into. And I guess you just got to feel, you know, you got to go where it feels right. I guess that's where he did. But just the fact that he came out against Georgia there was pretty strong comments, pretty interesting reveal there. But let's move on to this, Shane. This is, you know, just outside the SEC, but of course Clemson is closely tied to the SEC. They keep playing Alabama in these championship games. But This comes via Cole Kublick, the SEC Network analyst there, Shane, and he's got his Alabama radio show, Three Man Front, down in Birmingham there. But according to Cole Kublick, he's spoken to someone on the Clemson coaching staff, and they say they basically spent the entire bowl season prepping for Alabama, and they basically went vanilla against Notre Dame, knowing they could just basically roll out there and beat the Irish. What are your thoughts on all that?
I think you're right, man. I really do. I think that Notre Dame didn't belong in the playoffs to begin with. So I think Clemson just watched a little film study and realized they don't have to show too much. So it kind of made it hard because, you know, they're at the end of that Oklahoma-Alabama game. You know, Saban had a little ball game on his hand, so he couldn't have held his cards. I think he wanted to, but they weren't able to do it against Oklahoma. So, yeah, I think Clemson had definite advantage there by drawing Notre Dame.
Yeah, Shane, and I thought it was funny because there were some people that came out. I think the margin, I can't remember exactly what fans were touting. I think it was the margin of victory. Clemson's margin of victory was smaller over Notre Dame. This kind of goes against that, saying basically Clemson just didn't even have to prep because they knew they were getting a Notre Dame team that didn't belong. So I just thought that was kind of funny.
Yeah, and it's true, though. I mean, after all these games have played, how would you have switched up the Final Four? Who would you have had in there? Now that you've seen all the games, who do you think the four teams that should have been in the playoffs were? Just throw out the records. Just who do you think the four best teams were?
I would have put Georgia in there.
Mm-hmm. And would you have kept Oklahoma in there?
Yeah, probably. That probably would have been my team. I know some people like Ohio State, but I think that's just them. You know, speaking to people that cover that team, Ohio State was not very good this year.
Yeah.
They showed up against Michigan. They showed up in the bowl game. But, I mean, they nearly lost to Maryland. They got spanked by Purdue. I mean, they were just a very, very inconsistent team. So, no, I don't think they deserved it. So, yeah, I think they got it right with the exception of Notre Dame and Georgia.
Okay. All right, guess so.
All right, Chad, so we got a ton of coaching movement, and I think the most bizarre, most shocking move of all that's happened since we last recorded, Dan Enos, Shane, leaves Alabama. He's going to be the offensive coordinator. He's leaving for Miami. What in the hell do you make of this?
The thing about Enos was he was the only, like, if I were betting money, Mike, I would have put it all on Enos. I would have lost the house, the cars, everything, because I thought there was no way in hell he was going to leave the University of Alabama. I thought Tennessee had a small outside shot, but I didn't even know he was looking at other universities. So this one totally caught me off guard.
Well, Shane, thankfully we can get the information from the horse's mouth here. Dan Enos, he did an appearance with Sports Talk with Bo. That's out of Arkansas, hosted by Bo Mattingly. And obviously, there's probably a connection there. Dan Enos, former offensive coordinator there at Arkansas, so he jumped on Bo's show. And here's a clip of Dan Enos explaining the decision to choose Miami over Alabama.
There's so much more to these decisions than the small picture. There's big picture items that come into play, and there's family that comes into play, and there's so many things that come into play. So I think to people that aren't involved and they're not invested like we are, like as a coach, like this is your job, this is your life, this is your family. There's so much more to it. I mean, to then just the naked eye of like, well, they got good players coming back. Why won't you want to stay there? You know, I mean, that's not how we can think, and not how I can think, and how we can live our lives. Our lives are, you know, I'm trying to do what's best in the long run for our family and for our situations, and also trying to balance that with a career and be able to do things and accomplish goals that I would like to accomplish. And so, again, the Miami thing, it was less about Alabama and more about the Miami situation and how we just felt a really, really strong pull and desire to be there and to help a program that I believe is on the cusp of doing some great things with the coach that has a great vision. And no matter what you do, if you stay, you take risk. If you leave, you take risk. Life's about taking risks. And obviously, we always want to take ones that are very calculated and very well thought out. And that's what my family and I are doing.
Yeah, so it's really interesting, Shane. Dan Enos says he's never worked with Manny Diaz. They don't have a quarterback. They have a struggling offense. You're losing or you're leaving, I should say, potentially the Heisman Trophy front runner with all these receivers, all these running backs. But, you know, he says it's sometimes you got to look outside of football. And I don't know if I'm reading too much into this, Shane, but when I hear these comments, I think this is Enos's politically correct way of saying, you know, it was tough to work for Nick Saban, and I just did not want to do that again. Do you see that at all, or am I maybe reading too much into the situation?
Yeah, I mean, obviously he points it out. Yeah, I've got a lot of talent coming back, and I could work with. So the players wasn't the problem. It so then you go, well, is he from there? No, he's from Michigan. You know, did he ever work with Diaz? No. I mean, I look back and first thing I did when I heard this is I pulled up both their wiki pages to see if maybe they worked at the same university at one point, but they haven't. So, I mean, it sounds to me like Enos was dead set getting out of there. Now I am hearing a lot of rumblings that Jalen may be a package deal. Have you heard anything about that?
Well, as we're recording this, Shane, it's being reported that Jalen Hurts is on a visit Sunday evening to Miami. He's also been to Maryland, and he's also been to Oklahoma. So this guy's all over the map. I think that tells me that he wants to make this decision relatively quick. You know, the spring semester will be coming up, and you've got some time before spring football, I would think. But, you know, maybe he just doesn't want this to drag out. I would definitely think, just based on those visits, those are probably the three front runners. And, you know, I don't think I would go to Maryland if I were him. I think Oklahoma and Miami, they do make a lot of sense. That would be a tough choice. But if I'm a betting man, I think it's going to be one of those two.
Looking at this, just because the talent Alabama has, Dan could probably get just about any job after 1 year with Nick Saban. It kind of blows my mind that he would choose a lateral move to Miami, one he has to actually work for, and instead of just sticking around, unless Nick is that hard to work with.
Yeah, and during this interview with Bo Mattingly, Dan Enos noted he does want to be a head coach, but he's not in a rush to do it necessarily. He's just waiting for the right opportunity, and you kind of hit it there, Shane. If he were to have success, just like Mike Locksley had huge success this year with all these players, got himself a head job, you'd think Dan Enos could do the same. But now we're looking at Locksley leaving. We're looking at Enos leaving. Prior to them, Shane, we were talking about Brian Daboll. He lasted 1 year as Nick Saban's offensive coordinator. Steve Sarkisian lasted one game. Obviously, Lane Kiffin lasted three seasons, but by the end of that, it just seemed like their relationship was so toxic. And hell, it looked like Lane Kiffin was headed to LSU before Nick Saban kind of stepped up and helped get him get the FAU job. So, yeah, and it's not that side of the ball either, Shane, because we've talked to guys like Josh Gattis leaving after 1 year. Just time and time again now, it seems like all these guys are leaving. You know, on the flip side, Jeremy Pruitt, Kirby Smart, they stayed with Saban forever. So I don't necessarily think that, you know, Saban's some giant asshole that no one could work with. I just think I think if you're not ready for him, or you're just not as a hard worker as he is, I'm sure it can really wear on you. So that's how I read it. It's just not for everybody working for a workaholic like that.
Yeah. And Nick Saban, maybe he just hates offense so much that you take that job, he's just bound to hate you, you know? He's all about defense. Maybe that's why Pruitt and Kirby lasted so long, because they had commonality there. That's the only thing I can guess, because it seems like anybody that comes in there as coordinator, I don't know, man. They just don't make it. But the plug and play has worked. You know, it didn't help them in the national championship. But, you know, I am curious, who do you think they're going to be bringing in? I'm hearing a lot of rumors.
Let's jump to that, Shane, because Steve Sarkisian, he apparently has turned down an opportunity to be Arizona Cardinals offensive coordinator. And ESPN is reporting he did that so he could take over there at Alabama. So Sarkisian potentially back to Tuscaloosa, where obviously he was the offensive coordinator for their previous loss to Clemson in the national championship game. And Steve Sarkisian gets a lot of blame for losing that game, but I would not necessarily put that on Sarkisian. I mean, their defense, which was one of the best defenses I've ever seen, I think they gave up 35 points in that game. Their big running back, Bo Scarborough, he went off and then he got hurt. I don't know. Jalen Hurts didn't really look that good in that game, but I don't know. It was a rough situation. So what would you be? What would be your thoughts if Sarkisian went back to Tuscaloosa?
I'll drink to that, Mike. The thing about Steve is, I mean, as a Tennessee guy, I was hoping we would land him. But I don't know how an Alabama fan would feel. I think they've rode this ride. I don't know if they'd be happy to have this back or just fill the spot up, because I think that the offense will be okay next year. I think too, it's going to be impressive. Just like, so I mean, I think it's a great job for whoever takes. It'd be hard for them to screw it up. But you watch the national championship, and that's exactly what Locksley did. So I don't know. There's a lot of pressure in this job. So if Steve takes it and Alabama has two losses next season, they're blaming one person, and it ain't going to be Nick Saban. So I don't know if he wants to take that, because he doesn't do well under pressure, it seems.
Now, how about this, Shane? Let's jump to Georgia, where they have promoted James Coley, who was the co-offensive coordinator and quarterback's coach last season, to offensive coordinator. But that comes after the news that Eddie Grand may or may not have been offered the job. We touched on that previous podcast. And there was also reports that Dan Enos was the target of Kirby Smart. So it looks like Enos, maybe, you know, he looked over at Kirby Smart and said, hell, that's just another Nick Saban. Why would I want to go for work for that guy? That's just me reading into it. But they waited until Dan Enos was officially announced there at Miami to promote James Coley, which, interestingly enough, James Coley, former Miami coach, if I'm not mistaken. Thoughts on Georgia promoting James Coley?
Well, I think Coley was a backup plan, Mike, because if he wasn't, this would have happened sooner. So I think you're right. I think that whether the Kentucky one happened, I don't know. But I definitely could see Enos. I mean, they did say he interviewed for the job, so they definitely had some fillers out there. But I don't know. James Coley was co-offensive coordinator, so, I mean, if you're going to have a safety net, that's the best one to have. And I don't think Georgia's going to miss a beat here. I think we're going to see a little bit different offense next year, probably more passing, if I'm guessing.
I don't know about that, Shane, because they've got a beast of an offensive line. They've got all kinds of running backs, and they just lost, you know, they have no tight ends left, really. They've lost a bunch of receivers, so I think that what they're going to do is they're going to go back to the running game. That would be what I suspect there in Athens.
You think so? I don't know. It feels like Coley's going to be more of a passer, but you may be right. I mean, Kirby's still – I mean, he's still the captain. He's still going to – you know, if things got too wild, he'd probably rein them in. But it just seems like, just with Coley's pedigree, that's kind of what we'd see more of.
Now, how about this, Shane? This is another guy we've kind of spoken a couple times here. I thought he did a solid job there for Vanderbilt. But Derek Mason's offensive coordinator, Andy Ludwig, he's returning to Utah. So Vanderbilt now down an offensive coordinator. And, you know, obviously the Commodores had a disappointing bowl game, lost to Baylor. But I don't think the issue with Vanderbilt this year was the offense. I think it had more to do with Derek Mason's defense, interestingly enough. So what are your thoughts on Andy Ludwig leaving Vanderbilt and the Commodores having to find a new coordinator?
Oh, man, old Kyle Winningham. You remember him, right?
Oh, yeah.
They said this thing stemmed from a text message on New Year's Day. So I don't think it was in the workings for a long time, but as soon as Kyle got in with him, it seems like he, you know, wanted to bring him back. I mean, he's a native from that area, if I'm not mistaken, right?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, so that probably wasn't a hard get. And with Mason, you know, you've been talking about it a lot, that he may be under a lot of pressure next year with the new regime, and who knows what's going to happen at the end of 2019 season. So maybe he's just getting out before the storm, Mike. But I will say, Vandy's got some talent coming back.
Yeah, they got their running back coming back. That'll be key. But I don't know. This is troubling, Shane, because with a new AD, Vanderbilt going into the sixth season under Derek Mason, and they're going to be without Kyle Shurmur, who started the last 4 years at quarterback, down a new coordinator. Now, obviously, things like that can be overcome at many schools, but I just don't know how successful that can be done at Vanderbilt unless that defense takes a big step forward under Derek Mason next year.
Now, I know this just happened. Is there any rumblings on who they may be looking at? Is maybe, I mean, because if you do somebody internal, then there's not much of a turnover. So I'm just wondering if somebody on that staff.
Yeah, that's a good point. But at this point, I've not really heard anything. So I don't know. We'll just have to wait on that one, you know, as we go along.
Okay.
All right, Chad, well, enough of coaching news. I know there was quite a bit going on there, but we got some player news too, because, hell, Shane, everybody's leaving Alabama. A defensive back, Savion Smith, Deontay Thompson, and now Mac Wilson. They've all declared early for the NFL draft, Shane. Alabama's got seven guys that have declared early for the NFL draft. That's a Alabama record, and that will be the most in the SEC by two players. Florida has five. And keep in mind, this is 12 players, Shane, that have left Alabama early for the NFL over the previous two seasons. Do you think that's a big deal even for a program that recruits like Alabama?
I think so, Mike, because this wasn't the most impressive defense that Alabama's put out there. So what right. is it, you know, who's the starters now? So I know we've got a whole offseason to get these boys right. And, Saban, he's probably going to have three or four JUCOs come in there and that you weren't expecting to transfer in. But it just, I don't know. I'm a little worried just because, like I said, this is probably, for as great as that Alabama offense is, it was probably the worst Alabama defense I've seen in a long time. And you just lost most of them. So I'm just kind of curious what kind of product they're going to put on the field next year.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to cry for Alabama. I mean, they're going to have the most talented, but this happened a few years ago for LSU, Shane, where they lost, I think it was either 12 or 13 players early to the NFL draft. And this was, you know, the tail end of the Les Miles era. And, you know, obviously LSU then and Alabama now is a little bit of different. Alabama's just on a different plane altogether. But I do recall many people saying, you know, LSU should be fine. They recruit so many elite players. And then it kind of all came in on them. So not to suggest that's going to happen here at Alabama, because, like you've said, they're just going to replace them with some five-star guys. But they did that this year, too, to when you're talking guys like Minka Fitzpatrick at the door. You don't think Minka Fitzpatrick could have helped against Clemson in the title game? I mean, he may have been the difference. So
yeah.
Whether these losses are felt in September or waits until January, some of these losses are going to be key for Alabama. And on the flip side, Shane, let's look at it like this. LSU's getting good news because Christian Fulton and Rashard Lawrence have both announced they will return for their senior season. So Dave Aranda's defense is going to be even stronger next year. While they, you know, LSU's lost two players early to the NFL, they still have one remaining out there, Shane. He's going all the way to the deadline, which is Monday. And I think that gives a really good indication of how torn he is on making his decision. But Devin White, Shane, is still to make an announcement. So he's going all the way to the deadline. Obviously, what are your thoughts on Fulton and Lawrence coming back? And just, I think everybody is anticipating Devin White to go to the NFL, and that I think that clearly would be the right move for him. But, hell, if he wants to come back for one special season, I wouldn't criticize him for that either. What are your thoughts on Devin White maybe returning?
Dude, that would be big, man. That would be Gary Danielson right now is at the edge of his seat. He is ready for him to come back for another year. So I don't know, man. It just feels like that. That's the thing with LSU. And some, you know, you see this a lot, like with Alabama. Once one or two or three start going, then they pile on, because that's your teammates. That's the guys you've been practicing with for 3 or 4 years. So LSU, same thing. These guys have been through a whole lot, and you're starting to see some of these players decide to come back and do something special. I mean, some of the hardest recruiting Coach O's got to do is keeping these players on the team. So if you can get White to come back, good God, that would be awesome. That'd be like Peyton Manning coming back, but for defense. You know what I'm saying?
Speaking of guys coming back, Shane, I did want to add this guy, Vanderbilt tight end Jared Pinkney. I think he's one of the more underrated players just because he plays at Vanderbilt. I don't know if that many people followed him, but he's an outstanding tight end, so that's good news. But the one guy, this is a guy that's unfortunately going to be leaving here, Shane, South Carolina defensive back Javon Charleston. This is really messed up here, Shane. This is apparently, this is fairly common where a high school student needs to take online courses to ensure that they'll become eligible. And that's what he had to do in high school, his senior year of high school. And apparently, because of some mistake there in the compliance office of South Carolina, that started his NCAA clock early. So Javon Charleston just finished his junior year. He's found out that that means his career's over because it started basically before he even got to campus. So he can play one more year of football, but he'll have to go down to like a lower level. He can't even play at the Division I level next season.
Oh, man, that sucks. And there's no, like, waiver or some sort of
That's what I'm thinking. I think, I mean, in situations like this, I feel like he's definitely owed one. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But
yeah, I mean, as far as I know, I mean, he's doing it. He's doing everything he can to get into college. It seems like they should have caught this. So what's the clock? Is it like 5 years or something like that?
I believe it's 6 years.
Six.
I think it is five. I'm not 100% on this, but so he redshirted and he's just done his 3 years. So yeah, that would be four. And then he's getting that added fifth year for those online classes in high school. So I guess what they're saying is he is not eligible to do it for six. So yeah. I guess it would be five.
Yeah. Hopefully there'd be some sort of appeal or something. I mean, we got a long offseason. Hopefully get this thing resolved because this thing's getting a lot of traction. They've been talking about this for a few days now, so the media is definitely on top of it. I'd like for him to get some sort of appeal case at least and plead his side that he didn't know what he was doing.
So, Shane, we teased it earlier. The NCAA transfer portal, I mean, that thing is a hopping. It's flowing. There's guys jumping in and out of the portal. So what exactly is this deal, Shane? I'm going to try to explain it as best as I can. And what this is, I think there's some confusion. Just because you're in the portal does not mean that you're leaving a school. But what it means is essentially you are seeking a transfer, but you could return. And the reason behind this, some people are already mad at this just because they're seeing so many players enter it. But I think it's smart, Shane, because it eliminates tampering and it lets other universities know, hey, I'm thinking about transferring. You know, if you would like to contact me, we can do so. And it's totally legal. And if you don't like what you have to hear, you know, you can go back to your school. The only thing is when a player puts his name into the NCAA portal, they can lose their scholarship at the school they're currently at because you have to notify your compliance department prior to be putting in there. You notify them, and then 2 days later, you're in the portal. And so your school knows you're in there, and they can decide the following semester, not the one you're currently in, but the one upcoming, they can basically take away your scholarship. So there is some risk-reward there for people to do it. But what are your thoughts, Shane, on all these players? I mean, it seems like there's hundreds and hundreds of players in this portal at the moment.
Yeah. First off, somebody is leaking. You know what I'm saying? And I mean, because every time somebody's in there, it's out there. And I just want access. I think I'm the only one that doesn't have access to this portal because I would love to just sit on there and, like, you know, be the one breaking the news here. But the thing about it is, I mean, my college football, this has been going on forever. I mean, college kids. I mean, it's amazing the percent of players that actually enroll at one university and stay there the entire 4 years. You know, they transfer all the time. A lot of times they go to Division II or something like that, but then next thing you know, they're on a different team. It's just this portal is kind of putting it out there, kind of airing the laundry. There's some big names on it, so I think that's why people are so keen to dive into more of this transferring thing. But transfers have been happening for years, and it's just, I don't know. We just got a new name for it.
Yeah, and like I said, I mean, like you said, I should say, you know, this has been happening, but now it's just out there for people to know about, which I understand why fans are frustrated, but I'll tell you exactly who it is, Shane. So, for example, Drew Richmond, Eli Wolf, both for Tennessee, they're in the portal. Mm-hmm. All that is, when someone puts their name into it, every school has access to that. So they can look at it. And it's a coach at Georgia. It's a coach at Alabama. It's a coach at South Carolina going to whoever media member and saying, hey, Tennessee Drew Richmond's in there. Eli Wolf's in there. So they just want that out there, I guess, to create awkwardness and just for the fans to, you know, kind of get on the case of those guys. I mean, I don't really know the logic. It's impossible for me to answer the logic behind someone telling that information, but I would not think it would be a Tennessee coaching staff member going to a media member and saying, yeah, we got this guy and this guy looking to get out. You know what I mean? I think it's rival coaches just throwing it out there for whatever reason. That's the only thing, the only reason I can think of.
The only thing that drives me, and Drew's been talking about doing this for a while, so I'm not surprised that he's on there. But Eli was a walk-on. Like, he didn't have any other offers. He comes to Tennessee. He earns a scholarship, I think, his sophomore year or something like that. They made a big deal, had a video and all that, and then he enters the portal. So, I mean, who does that? If you wanted to play, you could have played other places. You probably couldn't have got a Division I scholarship, but, you know, you play with what you got, I guess. So that's the only one that kind of rubbed me wrong. And you were talking about yanking scholarships. I don't want to do that, but, you know, he didn't have one to begin with, and we broke down and gave him one. So, I don't know. That's kind of a slap in the face of the university, if you ask me.
Yeah, but I would say on that exception, Shane, I mean, the guy that gave him that scholarship was Butch Jones. Yeah. And then, you know, obviously the new coaching staff comes in, so he may not really fit what Pruitt wants to do, and I know for a fact actually he doesn't. You know what I mean? Like, the story's out there that when Pruitt met this Eli Wolf, I think he asked him, you know, like, are you defensive back or something? Like, he couldn't imagine a tight end being that small. So I don't necessarily put that on Pruitt, and I don't really put that on Wolf because
That's true.
Your body can only put on so much muscle, and Pruitt didn't sign him, so he's probably just looking for somewhere where he can actually play. And Tennessee's added two tight ends this offseason. They're looking to add another one potentially. So I think he just may be without a spot there.
Yeah. I'm just so negative these days, Mike, you know?
All right, Shane. So we were a little slow in the news. Obviously, offseason, not a ton going on here. But I wanted to leave the listeners with the final, you know, something kind of interesting here, maybe something to get the conversation going here. But on Monday afternoon, I had a post coming out on Saturday Down South where I came up with the most anticipated games of 2019. And the only, the only thing about this list, obviously, I wanted to keep it to SEC teams. So I kind of lean a little bit more towards SEC versus SEC matchups just because I'm a SEC nerd, obviously. But I have a couple, you know, non-conference matchups, SEC teams versus non-conference foes. So this list does not include, you know, anything like Ohio State, Michigan or anything because I honestly don't give a shit about games like that. But so I'm just going to run down my list here, Shane. And instead of, you know, I don't want to fly through them. We're going to go one by one here and then just give me your thoughts on each. Oh, before I get into the top 15, as I call it, I'm going to tell you a couple that just missed my list here, Shane. The season opener for Florida against Miami, which is in Orlando. And, you know, obviously this will be a pretty good game, I think, unless Miami completely goes into the tank here. And this game will probably jump into my top 15 if Jalen Hurts ends up picking Miami. It becomes much more interesting, but I just have it outside just because I think Florida should win comfortably. But these are two in-state rivals, so I do want to kind of see it.
Oh, yeah. This is – honestly, I'd have them in the top 15 because Miami's already chirping about beating Florida, and it's going to be right there in Orlando. And like you said, if – you got Enos down there, and if you get Jalen, this thing just got a lot more interesting. So I think this is going to be a hell of a game. And not to mention, it's a season opener, so that makes it even more anticipated.
Another season opener that I like, Shane, Ole Miss at Memphis. And for people that are, you know, not familiar with the Memphis area, that is a very big Ole Miss town. It really is. I'd say it's split, obviously not 50-50, but it's just a big SEC town. Tennessee has a presence there, but I think Ole Miss has even more Arkansas, Auburn, Mississippi State, they all have presence there. But obviously you got the local team Memphis there. And last time Ole Miss traveled to Memphis, Shane, they lost, which you got Mike Norvell facing Matt Luke here. I think there's a good chance Memphis wins again. So this really is a legitimate, I don't want to, maybe it's not a true rivalry, but you know, a Power 5, G5 rival. This is about as good as it gets. So I'm looking forward to that one. Week two, BYU at Tennessee. I didn't realize before I writ this article up, but this will be the first meeting between these two storied programs. So I think this will tell us a lot about where Jeremy Pruitt's program is in 2019. So I'm looking forward to it. And then last but not least, and why this game is not in the top 15 is just don't have a good feeling about either one of these teams heading into 2019. So I'm not sure this one's going to have much outside of bragging rights to play for, but the Egg Bowl, Ole Miss, Mississippi State, and obviously things got ratcheted up a little bit with that egg brawl we had this year, Shane. I mean, going into that game, these two, there was no bad blood in my opinion, but now it looks like it's going a little bit. So always looking forward to the Egg Bowl.
Yeah, I love the emotion of that game, and it's one of those that's tough not to have in the top 15. I see why BYU Tennessee's out, because that's going to be a barn burner. Tennessee's is going to blow them out, so I probably wouldn't have that one in there either. Ole Miss and Memphis, I think that's going to be a good one, because this is, I mean, like you said, there's a lot of locals that this has got a lot on the lines. There's a lot of Memphis fans and Ole Miss fans right next to each other, so it's not quite Ole Miss Mississippi State, but they're right there, man. They go to church together, so that should be a good one too.
All right, Chen. So let's jump into my list here, starting with the game I have ranked number 15. I've got the Florida at Kentucky game, SEC East Showdown, Shane. This will be the first SEC game for both teams. Obviously, Kentucky ended the streak against Florida. This one's going to be in Lexington. And, you know, a lot of people downplaying Mark Stoops' program. I think it's still going to remain strong, even though they're losing some elite talent. We'll have to see what Dan Mullen can do with a full offseason again here with Florida going into a year two of his program. But for me, that's one of the early season SEC games that I'm looking forward to the most.
Yeah, that really set the tone last year, or this year, you know. Mm-hmm. I think Florida and Kentucky, I think there's going to be a lot on the line. There's Kentucky owns the streak right now, brother, 1-0. So they get up there. This is early, but I really do think Florida's going to have a good year. So right. I think this could be I think this could really set the tone for them for the season, too. I mean, this is like – I think it's an SEC opener. So
it is, yeah.
Yeah, so this is a big game.
All right, Shane, number 14 on my list. I've got Auburn versus Oregon, and this is a season opener for both teams, and this is going to be held at AT&T Stadium there in Arlington, Texas, the Cowboys Stadium. Yeah. This game, you know, it's always fun to see these fun non-conference matchups. There's not a lot of great season openers in the SEC, so this is kind of the best one to pick from, but this will obviously tell us a lot about Auburn. Oregon's got a quarterback that many are saying it will be a top prospect, him and Tua, for the 2020 draft. So that adds a little intrigue. And of course, Auburn's going to be breaking in a new starting quarterback. So, you know, I'm just really interested to see how this one goes.
Yeah, I like that one. I just wish it wasn't in Arlington. I think they really missed out on that one. Could you imagine them being up there or even down in Auburn? I think a home and home would have been awesome in this case.
Yeah, definitely. All right, number 13 on my list, Shane. Alabama at South Carolina, and you got me juiced about this one the other day, and I kind of made my points here. This was, last time Alabama traveled to Columbia, South Carolina, Shane, they lost by 14 points. Steven Garcia had himself a day, cemented himself into South Carolina history with that performance, and I think Jake Bentley will have the opportunity to do the same. We just saw it, Shane. Clemson just tore apart Alabama secondary, and now Alabama secondary is going to be down a couple more guys, Shane. So this is another week two matchup. Jake Bentley, all those receivers. We just saw what Clemson did to him. I'm not ready to say, I mean, of course, Alabama's going to be a huge favorite in this game, but could you imagine all the doubt, all the haters there for Jake Bentley and Will Muschamp, all of that will be erased if they could beat Alabama.
Dude, this will be the loudest stadium week two. I'm telling you right now.
Right.
Because they're going to be bringing everything they have. And the benefit to South Carolina playing them so early is, like you said, they're going to be so young on defense. We're talking week two, man. They're not going to be jailed. That Alabama, who do they start week one? Do you know?
I believe Alabama opens with Duke.
Okay, so... Yeah, I don't think that. I mean, that's a good tune-up game, but I don't think they'll be ready for SEC play. So if South Carolina is going to beat Alabama, their best chance is week one or two. So this should be a hell of a game. I like where you got this one.
All right, Shay, number 12 on my list, Auburn at Florida, and I'll tell you why, Shay. A lot of people, you know, non-traditional SEC fans may not realize. This used to be an annual showdown, so these are two great rivals in the SEC that unfortunately don't get to play each other every year anymore. Mm-hmm. And they just, the last three times, Shane, Auburn's won. So this is obviously going to be a lot more difficult. It's in Gainesville, but it just seems like whenever these two meet, it's always a great game. And I think Auburn, I think they beat Tim Tebow, Urban Meyer down there in Florida one time, so... Whenever these teams match up, Shane, it always seems like a good game, and it's just it's like a traditional rivalry that we just don't get anymore. So it's kind of nostalgia, I guess, is why I put it here.
Yeah, no, I like it, man. I like it, and it's right before they play LSU too. So right. Maybe this is a trap game for Florida, because like I said, I think they're going to have a decent year this year. So that may add a little bit too.
All right, Shane, you're going to enjoy my rationale for this. But number 11, Notre Dame at Georgia, September 21st. Here's a big reason why I like this game, Shane. How often are you going to get Notre Dame on an SEC campus? It very rarely happens. The last time I recall it happening, this may not have been it then the last time, but this is just the last time I remember was when Notre Dame came down to Tennessee and they got it. They pulled the upset there in Neyland Stadium. But this will be the third week of the stadium, Shane. And I just think it'll be great that we get to eliminate Notre Dame from the college football playoff in the third week of the season this year.
Yeah, I was at that Notre Dame game, by the way, too. It was absolutely brutal. It was a sad day, Mike. But this year, this coming up year, is totally different. And I would have these guys ranked a little bit higher on your list just because Georgia can just end all playoff discussions of Notre Dame for the rest of the season. Notre Dame, this is a game that Georgia thought, I mean, you think about the national championship and the playoffs, Georgia thought they should be there and Notre Dame not. So I think there's going to be a lot more on this game, and I would move them up the list a little bit.
All right, Shane, how about my top 10 game, or number 10 game, September 21st, Tennessee at Florida. And I'm just a sucker for this game, Shane. This is one of my favorite early season SEC games every year. I think Tennessee is going to be one of the most improved teams in the SEC. We've already hit on that BYU game, Shane. If Tennessee manages to beat BYU at home, they're going to be undefeated headed in this one. And, of course, Florida's very good at giving Tennessee their first loss of the year. It seems like they've done it for about 20 consecutive years. But I don't know, Shane, what are your thoughts on this one? This is, like I said, one of the most anticipated games I've got in the SEC every year.
Oh, Mike. Yeah, here I am telling you how negative I am, and you throwing them words out. I'd have this game a lot higher just because it means more to me. This has always been a close game, except for last year. You know what I'm saying? So and I think Tennessee gets it back this year, and I think that we're going to have another hell of a ball game down at the Swamp. So this one kind of, you know, in the past has always kind of set the trend in the East. And, of course, Tennessee's not been where they want to be, and Florida's not been where they want to be. But this is both two teams on the rise. So I'm looking forward to this game.
All right, Shane, number 9 on my list, November 9th. And I feel ashamed that it's this low, but November 9th, LSU at Alabama. And this is always a great game. Always looking forward to it, Shane. But for two reasons. I mean, LSU's offense just goes into damn shell mode when they play Alabama, particularly in Tuscaloosa. And until LSU shows they can compete with Alabama, I mean, they got shut out last year. And I had so much hopes going into this game. So always excited about this game, Shane, but it's just never that entertaining anymore. It's always a damn blowout. Thoughts on LSU Alabama being at number 9 on my list?
Isn't it funny? Just a couple of months ago, we dubbed this as the greatest game this year, you know? Now you got him at, like, number 9. Don't be surprised if this changes a little bit closer to that game, you know, depending on the season and the records, of course. But I don't know, man. It just seems like the West has always gone through LSU or Alabama. So it just seems like there's going to be a lot on the line there. I may have that one moved up a little bit later in the season, but right now I'm with you. I can't do it because there's a lot of good games here.
All right, Shane, number 8 on my list, Texas A&M at Georgia, November 23rd. This is late in the season, but obviously Georgia's going to be the favorite in the SEC East, at least in the preseason. Texas A&M finished number 2 in the West. It's kind of, I think they'll have improved significantly if they can manage a tough schedule. They're going to be right in the SEC West race. I believe this is going to be the first meeting of these two since they joined the SEC. Excuse me, since A&M obviously joined the SEC. Thoughts on Texas A&M and Georgia meeting in Athens?
I think this is going to be a hell of a game, Mike. I think that a lot of people in the East especially are going to be wanting Georgia to lose, and this is a tough West opponent that they drew. Who else they got from the West, Georgia?
Georgia has Texas A&M, and then they always play Auburn, so that'll be their other game.
Oh, okay, that's right. So, yeah, they got a tough little schedule next year. So this should be a good one right there in the middle of November. So that definitely would – I mean, you could seriously see the landscape change in November.
Mm-hmm. All right, number 7 on my list, Shane. Texas A&M at Clemson, September 7th, the second weekend of the season. The Aggies nearly beat Clemson, Shane. They actually gave Clemson, I mean, I guess you could say the best game they had all year. Mm-hmm. Now, this was, of course, when they had Kelly Bryant. It was the starter, and Trevor Lawrence was still kind of just working his way in. He did play in that game at Kyle Field, and I think he played pretty well. But thoughts on this game, Shane? I mean, I think I know everyone's going to be picking Clemson, and they're going to be a huge favorite. But if A&M finds a way to take that next step, I really think they can make this a competitive game.
You know, this game surprised me this year, just how close it was. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's kind of a shame that the home and home wasn't flip-flopped. If Texas A&M would have had Clemson at home next year, I think we would have seen even more of a competitive game, maybe even an upset. So Clemson's a tough place to play, and they're going to be pumping this one up September 7th. So it's going to be at the start of the season. And it's going to be the first time that you're going to see the national champs have a challenge on the field. So, yeah, this is going to be a hell of a game.
All right, Shane, how about this one? Number 6 on my list here, September 7th. This is the best non-conference game here in the SEC all season, in my opinion. LSU at Texas. And keep in mind, Shane, both these teams are going to be in the top 10. They both got cupcakes week 1, so they should both win. Both should be undefeated going into this one. LSU, you know, there was some flirtation there with Tom Herman. They nearly hired him, and there was allegedly a handshake deal in place. And then what happened was Tom Herman got Texas involved, went back to LSU and said, hey, Texas is coming after me. Let's bump up that salary. And apparently old Joe Oliva, the AD down there, damn, hung up the phone on him and said, I got my guy, and went and hired Coach O. So I don't know. This is just a little added drama to that, but it's going to be even better because both these teams will be in the top 10 when they meet.
Yeah, and when Texas was on top, man, you got to remember, they were going down on Louisiana and stealing some of those recruits. So this is a border war type game, and there's a lot riding on it. This is going to be at Texas, though, right?
Correct. Yeah, next year they play in Baton Rouge.
Oh, man, that's going to be awesome. Yeah, I like it. I like it up there.
Number 5, Shane, we're in the top 5 now. October 12th, Florida at LSU. This has turned into what I think is the best divisional rivalry in the SEC. These two hate each other. Seems like a lot of people hate Florida. A lot of people hate LSU. So it's only natural that they hate each other here. So what are your thoughts on this one, Shane? LSU got their first loss of the season to the Gators this year. And this time they'll finally be getting to host Florida after back-to-back years of traveling to Gainesville.
Yeah, that's the thing. Name the last Florida LSU game that wasn't fun to watch. I mean, it just seems like every time they're on the field, it's a competitive ball game. It comes down to the very end, and it's usually who makes the first mistake. So this is going to be in Death Valley. I'm sure it's going to be at night, and a lot of them LSU, especially, man, if all them LSU players come back, all these Florida players coming back, this game could be there could be a lot of mustard on this one, brother. Damn, I'm pumped up for football already.
And I think the last time these two met in Baton Rouge was that game where – LSU went for it, fourth and goal in the one, and got fucking stuffed. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I remember it, man, because we were hoping that we'd get, I don't know, that's back in, never mind.
All right,
back in Tennessee days, we were kind of good there for a minute.
Number four on the list, Shane, Alabama at Texas A&M, same weekend as that Florida LSU, so it was also on October 12th. It's going to be a hell of a weekend. Crimson Tide going into Kyle Field for the first time of the Jimbo Fisher era. And we've seen, Shane, Texas A&M's only lost one home game under Fisher, and it was to Clemson. So this is going to be a tall task for Alabama. What are your thoughts on this Alabama-Texas A&M game?
Yeah, because I really think, as high as I was on Alabama last year, I think Clemson laid the blueprint, brother. I mean, they showed how to get Tua. They showed how to play this team. Now, Nick's a great coach. He's going to come out. I'm sure he's going to have the offensive coordinator dial up a few things that people have never seen before. But, I mean, this game right here is sneaky. This is a Texas A&M team that has the firepower to beat Alabama. So, yeah, right there in October, that's going to be a hell of a weekend right there.
All right, Shane, how about this? Number three on my list here, Florida versus Georgia in Jacksonville, November 12th. I mean, the world's largest outdoor cocktail party. What more do you need to say about that? I mean, this game basically decided the SEC East. I know Georgia, Kentucky really did, but I mean, that this was a damn battle for first half last year, and Georgia pulled away. I think most people are assuming these two teams to come a little bit closer together. So what are your thoughts on this one?
Mike, this is my number one, Florida, Georgia. I think as great as the game was this year, it's going to be 10 times better next. You know, I've always been a fan of the world's largest outdoor cocktail party, even though they don't want to call it that anymore. We all know that's what it is. And there's going to be so much riding on this game. The winner will own the East.
Yeah, I think so too. All right, Shane, number two on my list, the Iron Bowl, November 30th, Alabama at Auburn. And these Iron Bowls, Shane, they're always a little bit better there at Auburn, it seems like, on the plains. I think it's obviously tougher for Alabama to come away there. And whenever we're expecting Auburn to have a down year is when they're in the damn playoff hunt. So they're not going to be picked to win the West, but this may be the game that decides it. What are your thoughts on the Iron Bowl here?
Mike, out of all of them, this one I would probably have at the 10 spot. This is not an Iron Bowl I'm excited to see this year. Again, it's way too early. We're talking January 13th, 2019 right now. So things may change, but I still got a bad taste in my mouth for that Auburn product we saw on the field this year. And to think that this is going to be a ball game all of a sudden, I don't. So not as anticipated about this one. But, I mean, it is the Iron Bowl. I get the hype, but if we're just putting rivals in there, the Egg Bowl should have been top 15.
All right, Shane, number one on my list. Same weekend as the Iron Bowl, November 30th, Texas A&M at LSU. Every year this game gets more heated. There's more. There's just more added to it every damn year. Obviously, we had the 7 overtime thriller. We got damn Damian Craig coming over there, running over, and just talking shit. You got LSU players punching Texas A&M coaches. This is far and away my number one. I mean, this is bad blood written all over it.
This was my number two, but I get it. I get the overtimes. I get how it ended. It's going to be an LSU. So, you know, again, it's going to be another hostile environment. But to say one or two, you know, that's whatever. It's still going to be a hell of a ball game.
All right, Chad. I mean, kind of like you said, I'm just damn fired up some football just sitting here talking about it. We got like 260 some days to go, but
we'll revisit this list next weekend. What do you say?
Yeah, I mean, that's all I got. You got anything before we hop off here?
Where's Tennessee Vandy? I mean, that should be an honorable. I'd rather see that than the BYU game, planting the flags and everything. Let's see. No, I really don't, Mike. Appreciate everybody hanging out with us. Anybody that's got the iPhone, got the iTunes, want to get on there and put a 5-star heart, we would appreciate that. If not, who cares, man? Just hanging out with us is all that matters. So if you got any mailbag questions, remember, I mean, we're getting into mailbag season where we can dive into more of these. Just jump on our Reddit page. You can always find us. Just search That SEC Podcast. Every day Mike posts something about the podcast on there. So just leave a comment if you got a question. Mike knows everything, and I just like talking. So you got anything, bro? That's all I got.
No, sir. We're only 2 reviews away from 100. So, yeah, that would be great if we could get to 100. Maybe we'll do something special for the 100th person there. So, yeah, that's all I got. Shane, thanks for joining me. Thanks, as always, everyone out there listening. We really appreciate it, and we'll catch you on the next one.
All right. See you guys. Go Vols.